Weekend Breakfast with Googs Mshungu.
9 minutes after 9 o'clock, time for us to get into our wellness conversation. We are talking about honesty. We're talking about the truth. And how we got to this conversation is I saw an interesting clip on TikTok from Karamo. So if you've ever watched Queer Eye, which is now it's on Netflix, he's one of the Fab Five. And he has a talk show, actually. I think it's called Karamo. And in one of the clips from his show, he was telling the story of how in his household, he encourages his kids to tell the truth by saying that they're not going to get into trouble for telling the truth. And this is what he said on his show.
You know, I used to do something with my kids that was very like, my sisters would be like, what are you doing here? They used to like be so upset. But if my sons did something wrong and they told me first, they wouldn't get punished. And what I was doing there was cultivating a space where my children knew that honesty wasn't equated with punishment, with sharing their thoughts wasn't equated to punishment. And so it allowed them, even as adults, like I got a text just a minute ago where my kid was like, thanks for letting me talk to you, Dad. And he did something that I usually would have been like, are you kidding me? But at least he was able to communicate with me, which allowed us to have a conversation of how he could be better.
I just want to know, I just want her to be better, like be great. I know you got so much potential, Maya. You're so talented.
And so that was the clip that got me thinking about, well, what is the truth? What is honesty? What does it mean in our lives? Why do some of us struggle so much with being honest? And we're going to look at some of these questions and, of course, some of your questions with our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Khosi Giyane. Dr. Giyane, as always, good to have you on the show. Good morning.
My hearty greetings to you too, Googs.
So we're talking about honesty. We're talking about the truth, which is it's such an interesting concept. I think many of us agree that the truth is important. Honesty is important. Yes. You must be honest and truthful in your dealings with people. But the human experience is a little bit more complicated. It's a little bit more, someone even say it might be a little bit gray in how we deal with the truth. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in that clip, you know, Karamo talks about how he wants his kids to tell the truth by saying they're not going to get into trouble if they tell him the truth. And that kind of, for me, indicates something. For many of us, we're afraid or there is a hesitance around speaking the truth because we think we're going to get into trouble. Something's going to, there'll be some kind of consequence or punishment.
Yes.
And that can be a good or a bad thing, right? That, well, yes, there can be punishment and it's bad, but sometimes there can be consequences and it is good.
And necessary for that.
Yes.
Right. So what we're saying is absolutely, I don't think anybody can dispute or challenge the notion that, you know, honesty is a virtue that we all need to aspire to and, you know, to live through as much as possible in our lives. By the same token, however, it is not a magic bullet that answers and solves everything. It is not a blank check. Because, you know, I take what he's saying there, and it's great. However, if that's how we lived, then it means that, you know, honesty becomes a blank check. Mm-hmm. Honesty becomes, that as long as you're honest, then, you know, for example, if we take it to extreme, so somebody can, you know, can commit murder and be a serial killer and all of that. As long as they're honest, they are free, which is not, right? So we can't look at it from the dichotomous perspective that says you're either honest or you don't have consequences. And I think perhaps, you know, with young children, as you're cultivating that virtue, that value of honesty, it's important. However, I also don't want to think that it's okay to just say to them, well, you know, honesty is your blank check. It's your ticket to anything. So you can kind of do anything and you can get away with it simply because you're honest. I'm not sure that that's what we should be striving for. Mm-hmm. You know, as you were saying, there's complexity. It's a huge gray area and it's about finding the balance. And if we approach it through the dichotomous thinking of it's black or white, honesty and consequence always must go together.
Mm-hmm. So, but what role does honesty and being able to tell the truth play in, I guess, building relationships? We always talk about how humans are psychosocial creatures. We live with other people. We are in community with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems as if truth and honesty seem to play quite a big role in whether or not we're able to be with other people, and not just necessarily, you know, we'll think of friends, family, relationships, romantic relationships, friendships, but even the point you were just making, one of the ways in which we are in relationships with other people is in a society. A society manages itself with laws, and the laws say, I may not steal Kosi's cell phone. I may not hit Kosi. And if that happens, if I break, you know, the rules around that society, there are consequences. So there seems there is this role that honesty and truth play in how we are with other people. And it seems our ability to tell the truth or not tell the truth determines whether we're able to be with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two things at the heart of everything you've just said. Number one is trust. Honesty engenders trust, which trust is our most crucial and yet our most fickle relational currency as human beings. Hardest to earn, easiest to lose. And so when you are honest with me, I know where I stand. I know where things are. I know what the situation is. And that then engenders psychological, emotional, and even physical safety. You know, if you've said to me that you won't be violent towards me, I know what to expect. I know what this relationship means for my physical, emotional, and psychological safety. But if you violate that, if you say one thing and go and do the other, it creates unsafety. It triggers that emotional, that anxiety reaction that says, I don't know what's going to happen. So what, I never then know what to say, what not to say, what to do and what not to do. And that's the essence of what trust does. It builds that safe space for us to avail ourselves, for us to be calm, to be present, to be grounded, to know the lay of the land.
We received a WhatsApp voice note on this, and I love that you touched on, you know, trust and safety, because this message actually touches on that, and that how then the truth or not telling the truth can kind of come into play. Here it is.
Hi, good morning, Googs. This is John from Pretoria. I'm listening to your show. The reason I am such a devious liar is that growing up in an orphanage stroke children's home in East London, in the Eastern Cape in the 60s, we got beaten every single day for whatever we did. If we spoke, we got beaten. If we dropped a plate, we got beaten. We really, really did. And I had to lie to stay out of trouble from the age of 2 years old. So I cannot help myself. I've got to lie.
And I thought that was so interesting. Oh, it made me think of one of my favorite books, and everyone should read it, All About Love by Bell Hooks. She has a chapter on honesty. And one of the things she says in the book is lots of people learn to lie in childhood. Usually they begin to lie to avoid punishment or to avoid disappointing or hurting an adult. She writes, how many of us can vividly recall childhood memories where we courageously practiced the honesty we'd been taught to value, only to find out that they didn't really mean for us to tell the truth all the time? In far too many cases, children are punished in circumstances where they respond with honesty to a question posed by an adult or an authority figure. It is then impressed on their consciousness early on that telling the truth will cause pain. And so they learn that lying is a way to avoid being hurt and hurting others. She then goes on to say that lots of children are confused by that insistence that we must be honest, but also you learn when to lie. So you lie to hurt some, to not hurt someone's feelings. You lie to not make a parent upset. And I thought that was so interesting, that message from John, where he was saying it became for him a way to survive, a way to avoid harm, to avoid pain. And, you know, and so what then happens in that instance where you are confronted, it could hurt if you tell the truth, and it could hurt for you. And you, and then it becomes almost this a survival tactic, a way to cope.
Sure. Yeah. So I just want to say, John, thank you so much for sharing that. There's just so much beauty and sadness in that, you know, here you are, being truthful about your own relationship with truth. And you know, there's just the sadness in terms of what that childhood, that circumstance, that those experiences have written themselves into you, to be that the person that I'm saying it's understandable that you are the person that you are today, given the history that you come from. You know, why would a reasonable, rational, and decent person do what John is doing? And it is about like going back to the crime scene and visiting the crime scene. The thing that children need the most is safety, attachment and safety in the world that teaches them who they are. They are persons of worth. They are loved. They are cared for. They belong. And those experiences that John is describing were everything but that. So they negated the very foundation of what it means to be human, to be a social, relational being. They negated all of that. And what did that then do? Instead of thriving, he was, you know, the environment was only allowing survival for him to live through a mode of survival. So flight is what you needed to do. Freeze from the truth. That's how you will survive, because the truth will engender pain. Mm-hmm. And who wants to do that? Who wants to put themselves through that willingly? Nobody does. So it makes sense that in order to survive through life, and it's unfortunate that it was in the foundational years that he needed to do that. You know, that's the only kind of way that he knew to live. And in a space like an orphanage where everybody is, you know, put in, first of all, are put in a space of literally just getting by. You don't have very often, there's so many of you and so very few caregivers. The caregivers, for the most part, are just doing their job. These are not your emotional and psychological places of safety. These are not your own birth parents that are invested so much, right? They're there, they're doing what needs to be done, and the barest minimum, the best that can be done under the circumstances. And that then writes itself into who John becomes. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, and I hear that he's saying, you know, there's no other way for me. There is another way. Because the challenge becomes, things were necessary at a certain point. You needed to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But then the unfortunate part is that you didn't develop the other side of you, that when the threat was gone. So it's like continuing to wear a raincoat because it was raining. And when it stops raining, all you do is wear a raincoat. So there's only one side of you that you get to be in touch with, to discover, to live through. Right. And it is that circumstance has robbed John of that opportunity to find the other side of him, to have the safety to live in a different.
Not sure what's happening with Dr. Gianni's line. We'll try and sort it out. We are speaking to our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Kosi Gianni. And we're speaking about honesty. We're speaking about the truth. What is the truth? What is honesty? Why do we need it? Why do I think many of us struggle at some point or another with the truth? Someone asks you how your day was. You're feeling particularly awful. You substitute that with a lie. Do you know what? No, I'm fine. I'm okay. Someone asks you how things are going, and you substitute that with a lie. Dr. Gianni, we have you back.
Yes, I don't even know where you lost me.
And so you were saying with the example of, you know, there was a storm in your life, you put on a raincoat because that's what you need for a storm. But then perhaps there's a different day, it stops raining, but all you have is this raincoat.
Yes. And I was saying, you know, we then, in this case, become like a knife. A knife is very useful, but only on one side. It can be extremely sharp in that sense that for a John who needed to survive, you can be very astute at telling lies and getting away with it, you know, and outmaneuvering the enemy, so to speak. But when the enemy is gone and you continue to use the same. So the art of self-development, of personal growth, is about evolving from being a knife to being a sword. Mm-hmm. So there's the other side of him that needs to develop. And unfortunately, because that was his foundational experience, that's his place of safety. He dips into that all the time, and perhaps even when it's not necessary. So it is possible to grow out of that. But the first thing is, you've got to recognize this. And it's great that he has a reference point for how he got to be that. But personal development is about saying, there's more to me than just the survival.
Mm. And I mean, last week we were speaking about independence and interdependence.
Yes.
Us as, you know, on our own, but also often again, because we exist with other people, how we then begin to lean on other people, how we begin to or learn to lean on other people. And it feels as if to do that, to create relationships where you can lean on other people, they can lean on you. There is this trust, because you were saying honesty builds trust. We have to tell the truth, as terrifying as that is, that, you know, and sometimes the truth is scary. Maybe, you know, the thing you wanted is no longer the thing you want anymore, or the thing you're going to say is going to hurt the other person, but it is true. And it almost as if we want those relationships, those close, intimate relationships that see us for who we are, we have to tell the truth, even when it's often when it's very scary.
And that's when it perhaps is most necessary and most important, right? And it is about how do we shift from just being stimulus and response to recognizing that crucial moment in between this thing that has happened and me being truthful, reacting to it. It is about how do we build, it's a psychological and emotional safety. To be able to say, to speak the truth in such a way that it can be received. And so how do we make it safe for other people to at least avail themselves to hearing us out? Mm-hmm. And it is about how do I frame my intent in telling the truth? And it could be something like this, Gooks, to be more practical. I have to speak to you about something. And it's a very difficult thing for me to speak about, but an important one. And I know that it's going to be a bitter pill for you to swallow. It's going to be a painful, perhaps, thing for you to hear. However, we need to talk about it. So in other words, if we use that example that you've just cited, that, you know, this is the relationship, I now have a different interests and different needs and so on. So the dichotomous view of the truth would say, you either tell the truth or you lie and keep the peace. And I'm saying it is about navigating that gray area, that complexity of saying, how do I become honest and honor this person, the pain and so on. So it's so that it's, I'm not choosing between honesty and pain.
Mm-hmm.
How do we navigate that path of having this conversation that's going to be painful for you to hear, yet it's very important that rather than me just being a fake in this relationship, you know, faking my presence in this relationship when it does not serve me or certain things about the relationship don't serve me anymore, how do we create a space where we can be as Oraya Mountain Dreamer says in the invitation, you know, without moving or shaking or hiding, how can we be fully present and engage and hold that space? And it may take longer. It may not just be an instant, but it's a journey. It's a process of engaging around this painful truth that I need to put on the table, that you need to hear, and that we need to work with, which then takes us.
We have received a WhatsApp voice note, but we've received a few on this conversation that we're having.
Fabulous program with Nkosi Tshiani. That doctor just has the words that come out of her mouth for me. And I've been thinking of speech and drama a lot lately because it was extramural when I was a young person. And I think it helps to give children an option where they can act out. And I'm really interested in what Dr. Nkosi Tshiani thinks about speech and drama and performing arts as a way of introducing people with a history of trauma to a new world where they can take off that raincoat.
Dr. Tshiani?
Sure. That's a beautiful, beautiful, you know, platform for which to work with experiences, to process our experiences, to give a language to experiences. And it is one of the modalities together with, you know, talk therapy and a whole lot of other expressive arts that people can use. It certainly is a beautiful way, and especially with children, for them to develop language to, and you know, trauma. There's a book that says that the body keeps the score. That says, you know, the trauma gets lodged in the body, and the expressive arts, including, you know, speech and drama, are one of the modalities that we can use and draw on in order to language, but also to kinetically, through movement, process our experiences, you know, identify where it sits in the body and what are the sorts of things that we can do, either through arts, through drawing, through dance, through music, you know, to work through, to process, to release, to create a language, because some of these things are pre-verbal. And these other modalities used together can help us process and certainly, you know, work through very difficult experiences. And even just without necessarily trauma, just to help us to enrich our relational repertoire and our linguistic repertoire, so to speak.
I got an interesting tweet here, and I think it's a thing that kind of comes up a lot as well. At Tokyo Nya Siabata says, honesty and truth cause havoc. We lose our jobs and people for being straight up. How many people have died trying to be honest and truthful in companies, municipalities, government? You know, the sense that there can be very real world costs and implications to telling the truth. You know, if you ask someone, would you ever be, for instance, a whistleblower? Like, you know something, you see something, and you potentially speaking out might help. I think many people would say, I'm not sure, especially if they, you know, they, your family, your kids or whatever. And what happens in that context where, you know, the society we're in, the climate almost disincentivizes. There isn't, it almost feels like there isn't incentive to tell the truth. There isn't incentive to be honest. Where actually the opposite almost feels like the thing that's being rewarded. So what do you do there? Where and it is the reality for the, with the South African context, where it just feels as if the truth is just too costly. There's no reward for it.
You know, just the knife edge of truth and the knife edge of the society that we have become. You know, as I'm listening to you reading that, I'm actually visualizing. I saw recently a video of a whistleblower who was on her way to court, who got, you know, shot at gunpoint. And these are just the unfortunate realities. And absolutely, it makes absolute sense to say truth doesn't pay in these instances, because it comes at a price. And we South Africa is littered with examples of these things. And unfortunately, and I hate to say this, at some point we kind of have to say survival first, you know, and it may be for some people it is that it is a truth, and maybe, you know, the two sides of this dilemma are the truth. I'm willing to die for the truth, or some people may even say I'm willing to kill for the truth, you know, and it is just the extremity of the knife edge of the dichotomy and the dilemma that we find ourselves in, and especially in this country at this particular time. It is not one that I necessarily have an answer to all the time. And it is one that I think all of us have got to kind of sit with our own selves and say, it's easy to talk from a distance around it. And there's a point in which we can get to a point that says, I know it's not right, but I can understand why somebody would make that decision that says, as much as I would like to be truthful, it's going to come at too high a price. It's not a price I'm ready to pay.
So back to the analogy, which I think was such a fantastic one. So if you've only got a raincoat, that's kind of the tool you have, right? Because we're talking about different ways in which to cope with life, with the things we've seen. And now you're thinking, maybe it is time to add a little bit. I need other tools, because I'm not only having rainy days, and maybe the inability, the unwillingness to tell the truth is not helping me. Where do we begin with kind of figuring out the nick? What is the other thing I need? I have a raincoat, but I need something else.
So the first thing, you know, as I was saying in John's case, for example, is that you can't change what you don't see, what you don't recognize and acknowledge. So the first point says, I actually tend to lean towards lying as my relational currency. And in this case, so it would be interesting to be curious about ourselves rather than beating ourselves down. In this case, to go on an exploratory journey that says, who am I and how have I come to be this way? Because there's human behavior is never just random. We say it is teleological, it is purposive. There's a certain purpose that it serves. And to be able to understand that, to unpack those details for yourself, and this is where, you know, a conversation with another person may help, but it's certainly something, a journey that you can do on your own. I'm not saying, you know, everything needs to be taken to the therapeutic room, but these are just all the things that we need to unpack for ourselves. How did I come to be this way? And what has it given me? So in John's example for here is that when I have lied, I have survived. I have avoided pain. I have managed, I have outmaneuvered a very difficult situation or a place and time in which I lived. I had to do these things in order to be this way. And the question becomes, is it still my truth today? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, or is it my truth in all instances? Because it's like if the only tool you have is a spanner, everything, you know, is a hammer, everything becomes a nail, which is not necessarily true of life.
Mm-hmm.
So what other places in me can I come from to engage a situation that does not call out for this, or that does not require of me to react in this way? I could do this. I could this. Those are the possibilities I can come from. And in whenever I'm faced with this dilemma, what do I need to do? And it is about giving ourselves the gift of a pause instead of stimulus reaction. There's a crucial moment, and if we can presence ourselves and stand in that crucial moment, that is the place from which we grow. To say, okay, and it may be in that moment, may I take a moment to consider how I'm going to respond to this situation rather than react, you know, as a knee-jerk, as it were. Can I take a moment to consider how I'm going to respond to this situation and process for myself how else I would want to react than how I would normally and habitually react to a situation? And that is how we behave our way to the results that we want. And it may take conscious effort to begin with. It's like learning to drive. You know, it took all of your nerves and everything to think about how you're going to do this. And gradually, we internalize, we rewire ourselves in that way until it becomes a place, you know, from which we can come comfortably rather than just through very concerted, knuckle down effort to it. So we will behave and teach and learn our way through new behaviors.
Dr. Gianni, as always, it's a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Kosi Gianni. If you missed part of our conversation or you just want to revisit it, you can find all of our conversations on 702.co.za on the Weekend Breakfast page.